Hi, I'm Dr. Lakeland Hogan, gerontologist and caregiver advocate for Home Instead, and you're listening to Empowering Professionals in Aging, a podcast and webinar series presented by Home Instead and hosted by the American Society on Aging. This series was created for those who are dedicated to serving the aging population and who have a passion for learning. Working together, increasing our knowledge, and understanding the various perspectives of these issues will help unite professionals in our common mission to better serve older adults and the families who care for them. Throughout the series, we will cover a variety of topics, including medication management, end of life, technology, mental health, financial exploitation, and other important issues in aging. We hope you find today's episode enlightening.
Hello, everyone. Welcome, and thank you for joining us for today's webinar, Aging in Place, Home Safety and Fall Prevention, presented by Home Instead and hosted by the American Society on Aging. And now I would like to welcome our presenter, Lakeland Eichenberger, who is a gerontologist and caregiving advocate for Home Instead, an honor company, the world's largest provider of home care. With a doctorate in gerontology from the University of Nebraska, she educates professionals, families, and communities on the challenges faced by older adults and available resources to help them thrive. Lakeland is a sought-after speaker on caregiving, contributing nationally and internationally, and serving as a media resource. Lakeland, we're so excited to have you here with us today.
Thank you so much, Victoria. Hi, everyone. It's great to be with you. I know today's topic is a really, really important one, and we're talking about fall prevention. We're also talking about home safety because the two really do go hand in hand, but we know that falls can kind of lead to a series of events for older adults that could lead to a decline in their overall health and well-being, and so if we can do things on the front end to prevent falls from happening in the first place, if we can make their environment safer, then hopefully we can avoid those falls and all of the implications that come along with it. So we have a lot to cover today. I know Victoria has done a great job introducing me. It's great to be here with all of you, and thank you for taking the time to listen to this topic. So here are our objectives for today. We're going to talk about home safety and the prevalence of falls. We're going to talk about creating an age-friendly environment in the home that hopefully can reduce the risk of falls. We're going to talk about the strategies to reduce, again, some of those risks beyond just the environment and the home. And then we're going to talk about some resources towards the end of our presentation today. So let's talk about the prevalence. Why are falls so important? Well, recent data from the CDC shows just how common falls really are. So we know 1 in 4 older adults fall every year, and less than half of them tell their doctor. And we see sometimes that kind of fear of disclosing a fall due to the fact that an older adult might be worried, if I admit that I've fallen, then I'm admitting that I'm no longer able to care for myself at home, and they're afraid that, you know, they might take away some of their independence, they might make them move out of their home, those types of things. So sometimes if they're not reporting the fall, it probably is for a reason, probably linked to some sort of fear, embarrassment, that sort of thing. We know that 1 in 5 falls cause serious injury, and over 3 million older adults are treated in the ER four falls every year. So this is very, very serious. And 800,000 patients are hospitalized due to fall injuries. And mostly it's a head injury or a hip fracture. And we'll talk about how, you know, these types of injuries can lead to a decrease in their overall health and well-being. And a lot of times, if a person has a fall and they're injured and they're hospitalized, they're chances of going back home decrease. And so, again, we want to get ahead of this and do as much prevention as we can. And when we talk about the impacts that falls have on older adults, if an older adult falls once, it doubles their chances of falling again. So we cannot just think we address it once and we don't have to have the conversation ever again, because that person has a higher likelihood of having reoccurring falls. So we need to continue this conversation and continue to assess the risks. As I mentioned, hip fractures are common, broken bones, head injuries. Those are things that can be the result of a fall. And we want to try to avoid any type of injury like this to this degree, because again, often these involve hospitalizations, probably a short-term rehab facility visit or in-home therapies, and could, you know, lead to kind of this downward spiral trajectory of their health. And we often see that falls can limit their independence. 40% of people hospitalized don't return home because they're no longer capable of living independently. So when we talk to older adults, we don't want to scare them about falls because they probably already have a healthy fear of falling in and of itself. But I think it's important to explain some of the risks so that it can maybe motivate them to be more proactive in fall prevention. And I think it's really important also to talk about the implications that this has for the caregiver, the family members. There was a study done. This was a little bit of an older study back in 2013, and they asked caregivers about kind of their well-being after falls, and they found that there was a higher level of burden after their loved one had their first fall. The caregiver also had a fear of their loved one falling. So we think about, okay, the older adult has a fear of falling, but the adult daughter, the adult son, the family member, they are afraid that they're going to come over and find that their loved one has fallen. That is just such an unsettling feeling. If it's ever happened to you, I know it happened to me early on in my career. I went to one of my clients' homes, and he wasn't answering the door, and we eventually found the spare key outside, and when we came in, he had fallen in the bathroom the night before, and he had been laying there for a significant period of time. And so that was our cue that he needed more help and support in the home, especially overnight, because he was having some falls overnight when he would get up to use the restroom. So the fear of falling isn't just for the older adult. It can also be for the caregivers too. And, you know, stressing over it, having this kind of looming over their heads, it can be daunting. So caregivers can exhibit higher depressive symptoms. And also they experience a change in their routine. They're having to check in more regularly on their loved one, maybe calling more frequently, those kinds of things. So it does also impact the caregiver. And I think that, again, it's important for us to recognize. So not only is there this kind of emotional toll, this physical toll that falls can take, there's also a financial toll. So according to the CDC, the total medical cost for falls is over $50 billion per year. That is a significant amount. And a lot of that is shouldered by Medicare and Medicaid. About 75% of that $50 billion falls to those government programs. So again, if we can prevent some of these falls from happening, hopefully we can help to reduce the cost of falls. Also, in 2020, there was just over 24,000 deaths in the United States that were related to falls, and 86% of those were older adults, people over the age of 65. So we know that falls can eventually lead to someone passing away. We also know that falls are the leading cause of injury among older adults as well. So, you know, the growing number of older adults, the growing prevalence of falls amongst this population is really why we're here today, to talk about it. We need to talk about it, talk about how we can reduce the risks, reduce the number of falls, so that older adults can continue to live healthy lives and increase their well-being. So when we talk about the cost at kind of the national level, we also have to consider the cost at the individual level as well. It's been estimated that the average cost of a fall is about $62,500, with over 36,000 in direct costs. So again, these falls are expensive. They lead to medical appointments, visits, in some cases hospitalizations. And so there is a dollar amount that is related to falls, but there's also that psychological impact. And you can't really put a price on that, can you? So there's that elevated fear of falling. We've already talked about that. We also see that after someone has fallen, they might start to limit their activity and their social engagement as a result. They might not want to get out and about as often because they're afraid of falling. And when we see an older adult start to be more inactive, this can lead to further physical decline. They start to lose muscle mass. They start to lose their sense of balance. And those are things that can contribute to falls. So you can see how this is a cascading kind of downward impact that a fall can have on a person's well-being. We see an increased risk of depression, increased social isolation, and feelings of hopelessness, all things we don't want for the older people that we care for, whether it's personally or professionally. So again, we need to address these falls. And there are some common risk factors that can contribute to falls. And we can look at it in these three buckets of intrinsic factors, extrinsic, and behavioral risk factors. So the first one, the intrinsic, is more those age-related changes in the body that can increase the risk for falls. Extrinsic, pardon me, I'm having trouble with my words today. These are hazards in the home or community that can contribute to the risk. And then behavioral risk factors are things that someone does, their behaviors that can contribute to their fall risk. So let's dive into each of those. So when we think about the intrinsic risk of falls, you know, we talked about how the aging process relates to the risk of falls, and you might think, well, why does polypharmacy end up on this list? Well, often older adults are taking multiple medications. Often they've taken maybe a medication over a long period of time, and as we age, the way our body processes medications can change. So if a person has been on a medication for, you know, 15, 20 years, it may have been really effective when it first started, but as they've gotten older, maybe some additional side effects have come about that have impacted things like their balance, created dizziness, those kinds of things. So it's important, and we're going to talk a lot more about medication as we go through today's presentation, but the more meds a person takes, it could increase their risk of falls because there could be a chance of adverse drug interactions and those kinds of things. Again, we also know that if there's a history of falls, the more likely a person is at risk of falls. We know as we get older, we do lose some muscle mass. So it's really important to incorporate strength training activities and movement. That's good for our muscle mass. It's also good for our gait and balance. We know as we age, we can start to have issues with that. And also with that, we can have issues with our vision. And if you think about it, being able to see where we're going is of course, very important for preventing falls. You might not see a stack of clutter and trip over it. You might not see a pet, be able to see a pet and trip over the pet. Or you might not be able to see that the surface of the floor is wet and slippery, and that could lead to a fall. So we want to make sure that we're addressing vision as well. And then there's postural hypertension that can occur for some individuals, depending on chronic conditions that they're facing. And that is when you go from laying down to sitting up or from sitting up to standing, and you become lightheaded, you get dizzy. It's that kind of drop in blood pressure when you go from those different positions. And of course, if you're feeling dizzy, if you're lightheaded, that could increase your risk of falls. So, you know, encouraging an older adult, you know, when they go from laying to sitting, just to take a minute and get adjusted before they stand up. So if there is any dizziness or lightheadedness, they have a moment still in that seated position before they get up to move about. Or same from going from sitting to standing. Stand for a few moments before you start taking some steps. Use those assisted devices like a walker or cane to get your balance before you start to walk through your environment. Just little things like that can go a long way. We also know chronic health conditions can impact, a person's risk for falls. If a person has arthritis in their joints, they might have weakened their joints, and so it might be harder for them to move about. If somebody has Parkinson's, that's a movement disorder. We know that there's some rigidity that comes with the muscles in that chronic condition. And if somebody doesn't take their medication on a very strict schedule, it could cause issues with their mobility and their movement, that sort of thing. So again, we need to be paying attention to these intrinsic risk factors when we're working with older adults. But also those extrinsic ones. And those seem to always come to mind when we think of fall prevention. You know, what hazards in the home or the community exist? Are there proper handrails? Are there any tripping hazards? You know, extension cords, throw rugs, slippery or uneven surfaces. You know, even going from like tile to carpet or hardwood to carpet, that transition could literally trip someone up and cause a fall. You know, being mindful of those various surfaces within the home. Also, proper lighting can be so important. Having proper lighting in the stairwell, also making sure, you know, at the top and bottom of the staircase, there is a light switch so that you can turn the lights on before going up or down the stairs. Making sure that at night, when the person gets up to go to the restroom, maybe there's a nightlight or motion sensor light that comes on so that the person is safely moving about in that environment. And of course, the bathroom. We're going to talk more about that and important safety measures in the bathroom. But you know, are there grab bars? Can they get around in the bathroom safely? And are they using those assistive devices? We see so much resistance to a walker or a cane. I think that's because you know, that's a very visual cue to the world that they need help. The person needs help. And so they may, maybe from a sense of pride, they don't want to use the walker or cane. Or maybe they have some sort of cognitive impairment, dementia, Alzheimer's, and they forget to use the walker or cane. Or maybe it's not set up properly at the right height for the individual. So, those kinds of things can those assistive devices can go a long way in helping to prevent some falls, but we have to use them. They're not going to do us any good if they're sitting in the corner collecting dust. And so sometimes you have to motivate them to use those assistive devices. Sometimes it might not work to say, oh, you need to use it. You have to, and kind of be demanding. But instead, you could approach it from, well, Mom, I've noticed that when you use your walker, you're not as out of breath as you usually are when you're not using it. Those kinds of encouraging statements might help them see the benefits of using those devices. And so we're going to be talking more about kind of ways you can frame things throughout the presentation to make the older adult kind of buy or to help the older adult buy into some of these risk reduction measures. Then we also want to talk about behavioral risk factors. We know, again, that fear of falling, it keeps coming up, but it's so common. It can really keep a person from living. It can prevent them from getting up and moving about in their environment. As we talked about, movement is so important for maintaining muscle mass and strength and maintaining good balance. So we need to address that fear of falling and help empower the older adult to move safely about their environment. Sometimes it's things like proper footwear or clothing that can be contributing to their risk of falls. You know, for some older adults, especially if they have neuropathy in their feet, having stable footwear on, even within the home, can be so helpful. You know, I love to go barefoot in my house, but, you know, for some folks, it might be in their best interest to wear, you know, socks with grippers on the bottom or to wear sturdy footwear even throughout the home to reduce that risk. Again, that lack of physical activity, we'll talk more about that in just a bit. Medication use, we've already talked about that a little bit, and we'll continue to talk about that. One thing we haven't touched on is drug and alcohol use. You know, some older adults, they consume alcohol. They have their whole life. Maybe they have always enjoyed an evening cocktail. Something to keep in mind, though, is as we age, we metabolize alcohol slower. Our bodies just don't process it the same. And so it could be contributing to potential falls. And so, you know, maybe instead of a nightly cocktail, maybe it's a mocktail. Those are popular now. It kind of looks fancy and those kinds of things, but it doesn't have the alcohol content. Or maybe it's instead of a full glass of wine, you make a wine spritzer, a little half glass of wine with some club soda or 7-Up added to it. So we still get the enjoyment of it, but without potential risk for falling after. We also know that sometimes certain medications, like opioids, for pain management, can lead to falls. Falls can be, again, related closely to medication, so we're going to talk more about that in just a bit. And then risky behaviors. That can incorporate a lot of different things, so what comes to mind to me when I see risky behaviors in relation to fall risk is things like climbing on a ladder or a step stool to reach for something when it's no longer safe for an older adult to do that. You know, those kinds of things hopefully can be avoided by, you know, moving items to a reachable or more convenient location instead of putting, you know, the pots and pans way down low or way up high. Can we keep them on the counter or at counter height so it's easy to reach for those types of items? So, of course, it's important to know the risks, but it's even more important to know how to reduce these risks. So let's talk more about that. Studies have shown that reducing treating modifiable risks can help reduce falls by up to 2/3 of falls. So that's really, really important. You can also start the conversation with an older person by asking them a couple questions. You know, have you fallen in the last year? Or maybe even in the last month or the last week, kind of depending on the situation and how frequently they're falling. Ask them, you know, do you feel unsteady when you stand or when you walk about? Do you worry about falling? Just call out the fear of falling. Ask them about it. You know, say, do you have a fear of falling? And if they say yes, say, tell me about that. What makes you nervous? And then you can lead into that conversation of risk reduction and empowering them through things that they can be proactive in to reduce their risk of falls. And again, we know the more of these risk factors a person has, the more of a risk they have for falling. So as we kind of went through the intrinsic, extrinsic, and behavioral risk factors of a person is checking a lot of those boxes, wow, they might have a higher risk of falling than others. We know there are some interventions that we can introduce that can reduce or eliminate some of these risk factors. But we also have to also take into account and assess their willingness to change their behavior because, you know, especially some of those risky behaviors, they have to be willing to make some changes maybe to their lifestyle in order to help reduce their risk of falls. And I don't know about you, but I have worked with a few stubborn older adults or stubborn humans in general. Doesn't mean they have to be older. And so sometimes getting them to change their behavior can be really challenging. One approach that I've heard lately, actually I have a podcast, it's called Caregiver Chats. And on that podcast, I actually just a few weeks ago had an episode drop that was all about fall prevention. And my colleague April Ibarra and I were talking about fall reduction, and she brought up this great acronym called SET, S-E-T. And it was Support, Empathy, Truth. So when you're talking about things like fall risks and fall prevention, you want to support them. Say things like, you know, I really want to help you reduce your risk of falls. You need to empathize. know, I realize that it's scary to you, the prospect of falling. It is. I recognize your fear of falling. I empathize how that's really hard for you. And then you land with some truth. But the truth is, you've had 3 falls this month already, and if we don't make some changes, this could land you in the hospital. You could end up with some sort of injury, and we really don't want that. So again, that SET model can be helpful. You be supportive, you be empathetic, but you tell them the truth. Don't beat around the bush. Make sure that they recognize what kind of the realities are of the situation. And another important person to bring this topic up with is the healthcare provider. It's really important to talk with the person's physician or provider about recent falls, the history of falls, any concerns that there are around balance, mobility, muscle mass, strength. You want to make sure that when you have this conversation, you're bringing the full medication list, not only just the prescriptions that the person is taking, but any over-the-counter medication, any supplements, vitamins. And as you discuss with the healthcare provider, they might be able to make referrals for things like vision tests, hearing tests, occupational therapy. And you can also talk with them about physical activity levels. The person is anxious about moving, getting up and about, by exercising, talk with the healthcare provider about that. Perhaps there's physical therapy that can be prescribed. Maybe it's home healthcare, coming into the home to do kind of an assessment and help the person figure out what activity is best for them at this point and how can they build upon their strength. Healthcare provider might also be able to write a prescription for something like a cane or walker or a wheelchair scooter, and perhaps for that older adult, it could be covered by their insurance carrier if there's a prescription from the doctor. The doctor might also have some community resources, such as movement or exercise classes within the community, those kinds of things. And then also, they might be able to do a risk evaluation. The Stopping Elderly Accidents, Death, and Injuries Assessment, that acronym is there at the bottom of the slide, that assessment is a tool for providers to help them assess a person's risk of falls. And then there's a whole program that provides them with tools and resources. So if you are a provider or you work for a provider, you might look into this assessment and toolkit to help your patients, your residents, whoever you're providing care and support to help them reduce their risk of falls. I know I've touched on medication quite a bit, but let's dive even deeper into that. It's really important, if there's falls occurring, to have a medication review done by a healthcare provider or a pharmacist. Pharmacists are super accessible. You can walk up to the pharmacy counter at any drugstore or grocery store and talk to a pharmacist. So don't hesitate to reach out to them and ask them to review your medication list. Sometimes there are multiple providers. A person might be seeing a heart doctor, and they might be seeing their general practitioner, and then they might be seeing a neurologist. So all of those providers could be prescribing different medications, and they might not have the full picture, the full medication list. So it's always important to have that list up to date and talk to the provider about any medications that the person might need to stop taking, or maybe there's an alternative that is safer that has less side effects, or maybe there's a different dose that is needed for the medication. As I mentioned, as we get older, our body metabolizes things differently, and so the dose of the medication might need to be adjusted for where the older person is at that time. And of course, we have to keep an eye on any side effects that occur, especially after starting a new medication, things like unsteadiness, impaired alertness, so it causes kind of some fogginess, or any dizziness. Again, we know that falling can increase with the number of medications a person is taking. So again, that's why it's important to have conversations with the healthcare provider to make sure that all the medications that the person is taking is working, is beneficial, is part of their healthcare plan and overall sense of well-being. And we do know that there's certain types of medications like psychoactive anti-hyperintensive meds. Those are often linked to falls. They have a higher falls risk. There's also an entire list of medication that the American Geriatric Society puts out. It's called the BEERS criteria, and we're not talking about a pint or an ale of beer here. It's just what it's called, the BEERS criteria. For more information, or you can go to that BEERS criteria for more information on medications that can be linked to falls. I've hyperlinked it here, so if you're downloading the slides, you can just click on the pink words there, or you can just Google BEERS criteria, American Geriatric Society, and you can find that list. Okay, so we talked about the importance of medication and reviewing it, making sure that part of the equation is being addressed. Now let's talk about exercise and movement. We know that exercise, movement, balance can improve leg strength and can be a really effective strategy, and in some cases can reduce the risk of falls by 24%. And so it's important to get up and move. And exercise looks different for everyone. You have to find something that works for the older adult that meets them where they're at. And you might not want to call it exercise. You might just say incorporate more movement into their day. For some, that might just be, you know, if they love to watch TV, it's getting up at every commercial break and just walking about the house just to get their legs moving so they're not completely sedentary all day long. Maybe it's walking out to the mailbox every day to get the mail. If somebody lives in a community living setting, maybe it's walking the hallways. Some of those communities have very long hallways, and so if you're able to walk them a couple times a day, and then after a period of time, maybe you add another lap, that can be a great way, again, to incorporate movement. I mentioned physical therapy. That can be a great way for a person to get kind of a personalized assessment on where they're at. They can help with standing, balance, strength exercises, also with transfer practices. You know, for a family caregiver, if they're having to help their loved one transfer from a bed to a wheelchair, a chair to a wheelchair, there can be a risk for falls that happens there in that transfer situation. So using a gait belt, having a physical therapist help show you the best ways to do that can be really helpful. Physical therapists can also help with those assistive devices, making sure that the walker or the cane is at the right and appropriate height for the older adult. There is some science to that. There's not just kind of one height of a walker or cane that is right for everyone. And then physical therapists can also help review some techniques for getting up after a fall. And towards the end of the presentation today, I have a graphic with some steps on how to safely kind of get up from a fall that you could share with an older adult and a family caregiver. And then there are evidence-based fall prevention programs that are out there that you might see a senior center or a wellness facility offer, like Matter of Balance, Stepping On. Also, Silver Sneakers is a program that is available across the country, often at YMCAs. My grandparents, they go to Silver Sneakers 3 days a week. I know that that helps contribute to their balance and mobility. They're in their mid-80s and are very active and in pretty good health. Getting out to those classes can be beneficial. Also provide some socialization, which is great. But if a person can't get out and about, I know for sure Silver Sneakers offers some online programming. You could stream on demand some movement or exercise classes. And of course, if you look online, there's a lot of online strength mobility options out there. But you do have to keep in mind what will be appropriate for that individual. And so talking to the healthcare provider about it or having an assessment from a physical therapist can be really helpful. We've also talked about vision and hearing. If somebody has poor vision, they have hearing impairment, it can impact their risk of fall. So making sure that a person keeps up with their regularly scheduled eye exams to make sure that their prescriptions are up to date, that's super important. Being tuned in to any changes in the person's vision. That can, of course, lead to the risk of falls. If somebody has cataracts or glaucoma, that can impact their field of vision and so could increase their risk of falls. So a person might want to look into having a surgery like a cataract removal, that sort of thing, if it's appropriate. And then from a hearing perspective, a lot of people don't recognize that there is a link between hearing and balance. And so if a person has hearing impairment, it could be impacting their balance as well. So we need to encourage that the person uses hearing aids. Also, we love our pets, but sometimes we cannot hear the pet approach. So sometimes a little bell on the collar of the cat or the dog, the pet in the home, can help the older adult better hear when that pet is around to reduce the risk of tripping over them. So those are things to consider. All right, so next we're going to kind of move into the home safety portion of the presentation today and how we can set the home up for success, the environment up for success to hopefully reduce the risk of falls. We do know when we look at the home, falls most frequently occur in the bathroom and in the kitchen. So, and really, you want to look at all of the rooms of the home and start by zeroing in on the rooms that the older adult frequents the most. Often it's, you know, the living room, kitchen, bedroom, bathroom. So the guest bedroom and the basement, maybe they're not in those parts of the house very often. So you want to start with the areas of the home that are most frequented by the older adult. And you want to look at kind of general things like rugs. Can you remove them or secure them to the ground? Look at the lighting. We've already talked about that. Are there any slick surfaces that we need to be aware of? Is there a lot of clutter? We know that some individuals like to accumulate things. And in some extreme cases, if you walk into a home, you might see a small pathway amongst all of the clutter. And in those cases, it can increase a person's risk for falls. So can we clear those pathways? Can we make things safer? Of course, we want to remove exposed extension cords or reroute them to make sure that we have those clear walkways. I mentioned storing items at an appropriate height. We talked already about pets and how we can make sure that the person can be aware of where the pet is in their environment. And also, it can be important to consider a personal emergency response system, a PERS, as they're called. Really, that's the fall detection, the monitoring system. I know that it can be challenging to get sometimes an older adult to wear those personal emergency response systems. It's usually in a pendant or in a watch style. But the great thing about those is if a person falls, they're able to call for help. And a lot of the technology now has automatic fall detection. What that means is even if a person falls and doesn't push the button, it still will alert the family member or the emergency response team that is associated with the device. So those can be a great option. Again, you do have to use them, to wear them. They're not going to do anyone any good if they're left on the nightstand because likely they'll fall in the kitchen and they won't have it on them, but they can be really helpful. I know also the new Apple Watch has some fall detection capabilities. So if a person is very, very resistant to the PERS, the personal emergency response system, maybe a more trendy Apple Watch is kind of up their alley. But anyway, having that can be extra peace of mind for the person and for their family. We also want to be sure we're considering stairs and steps. We need to evaluate those both inside and outside. You could consider putting additional railings or grab bars. You can see in the photo that staircase has a railing on both sides. That can be extra sturdy for that individual. Or, a little grab bar by the garage door, because often there is a few steps up coming in and out of the garage. So having something to hold on to can be really helpful. You can also mark the edge of a stair. As you can see that those yellow stripes, you could just use some tape or colored tread, especially on the bottom and the top stair. That can be helpful to indicate to the person, okay, this is the last stair. I apologize, I have some allergies, so I'm getting a little dry spot in my throat. And then, of course, lighting. There are great kind of motion lights that can be added to staircases. We know that falls can commonly happen in the bathroom, so we want to make sure we have grab bars in areas that will provide them with extra support. We can also look into non-slip rubber mats in the shower or the tub. Also, if a person gets tired standing for long periods of time, you might consider a shower chair or bench. We can also utilize some of that lighting, the motion sensors in the bathroom. I know in my own house, I have a motion sensor in my bathroom so that at night when I get up, I can easily see where I'm going. So that can be helpful. Also, a handheld shower head that allows a person to control where the water goes. That can be helpful as well. And any sort of throw rug in the bathroom, we want to make sure that it's secure to the floor. Maybe choose one that has a rubber backing or use some double-sided tape, again, to secure the rug. So lots of little things you can do in the bathroom to make things a little safer. And then there's the kitchen, and there's some things we can do to make sure that the kitchen is set up for success as well. Wanting to make sure that things are stored at a height that is reachable for that person. If they do need a step stool, making sure that they have one with a bar to hold on to. Also making sure maybe there's extra lighting under the cabinets to help with visibility on the counter when they're preparing meals. And then also looking for alternative tools to reduce the risk. So what I have pictured here on the screen is a pasta strainer that, you just lift up out of the hot boiling pot of water. That way you don't have to dump the pasta and the water out into the strainer. It's already in there. So just looking for little things to make the environment safer so that they're not carrying around heavy items. They're able to reach things safely and reducing those risks of falls. A resource that we have at Home Instead is a home safety checklist. You can download it for free. It's great. It walks through each room of the home and helps you assess for potential risks and gives you some suggestions on ways to make that room safer. So we're in springtime here, hence my allergies and my cough. Apologize again about that. But it can be a great time to assess the home through the lens of like a spring cleaning. So you could say to the individual, let's do some spring cleaning, let's get rid of some of this clutter, and it's also going to help reduce the risk of falls. So it can kind of have some dual benefits. And so let's kind of wrap up by talking about behavioral change. And also I wanted to offer some tips on if a fall does happen, because even if we do everything in our power to prevent a fall, it's still possible. So how can an older adult potentially get up safely after a fall? So part of the conversation should include, what happens if you do fall? How can you get up if you are able to? And if we're able to get them up, as quick as we can, that can help reduce their risk of the consequences of falls. So This is a great graphic that shows, you know, how to prepare, how to work, move your way over to a chair or sturdy bench or item, couch perhaps, to help get up, to rise, and then to sit. And so, again, this can be a helpful tool to discuss with an older adult so that if a fall does occur, they know potentially how to safely get up from that fall. And we know that for some, it can be really challenging to change behavior. And so sometimes you have to give it time. This might not be a quick conversation where everything is solved in one discussion. It might be something that has to take place over a period of time. And I would say then also needs to be reassessed regularly, especially after any major health event, any changes to the living environment. And so when we think about having this discussion and trying to get the older person to change behaviors, we need to kind of bring up the discussion and give them time to think about it. Give them time to process. I know some people might feel caught off guard if it's brought up out of the blue. So one approach to the conversation could be, you know, Mom, I'd really like to talk about some of your frequent falls. I know right now might not be the best time, but I would really like to set aside some time next time we're together so that we can talk about it. Because I just listened to this great podcast on caregiver chats, or I just watched this webinar with some tips on how to make the environment safer. And I have some ideas on some things we might be able to do if you're open to that. And so sometimes it's framing up a conversation for a later date to give them time to process and prepare. You could start with those questions. You know, how are you feeling about the last couple of falls that you had? Are you afraid of falling? What is your thoughts on it? Just, again, bringing it up for an open discussion and not from a place of, you need to do this or you need to do that, because a lot of people don't like being told what to do, but they want to be part of the conversation, part of the solution. So then you can put kind of an action plan together, some steps that you can take, and again, revisit the conversation as things change, or maybe there needs to be some encouragement or reinforcement of the positive behaviors to make sure that they continue to engage in those activities that reduce their risk, like encouraging the attendance of an exercise class or those types of things. So just know that these conversations aren't a one-and-done conversation. There's a lot of elements that go into this from a kind of emotional standpoint, a physical standpoint, an environmental standpoint, and so it's important to kind of take an inventory in all of those areas and then put together a plan, an action plan to ensure that the older adult feels part of it and is probably then more willing to be an active participant in the solution. So I wanted to wrap up with some resources. There's some great resources out there. There's a fall prevention conversation guide for caregivers that the NCOA puts out. The CDC has a fall prevention program that we can pass along. That Stop Elderly Incidents, Deaths, and Injuries website by the CDC is listed here. If you're a provider, that might be a great place to get some additional resources and information. That home safety checklist that I mentioned on our website, you can find it at makinghomesaferforseniors.com. Also, if a person is in need of some equipment like a walker or wheelchair or shower bench, and maybe they don't have the financial means to purchase, or maybe they want to get something used, a lot of communities have equipment lending closets, but a lot of people just don't know about them. So I have gotten a chance to know the founders of the Adaptive Equipment Corner, and they, on their website, have a directory state by state of where you can find these equipment lending closets. So would definitely encourage you to check that out. The Occupational Therapy Association has a fall day that you could promote. They have some great resources. Also, the National Institute on Aging has some information along with the USC School of Gerontology. And then Phillips Lifeline had that great graphic that you can share out. So with that, I just again want to thank you for joining me. Apologies for the dry throat and the coughing, but I hope that you still were able, despite all of that, to learn a few new maybe tips or resources for this topic of fall prevention. I'd also again encourage you to check out my podcast. I should have put that on here. It's Caregiver Chats. You can search for that on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, whatever your favorite podcast app is. And just the recent episode was on fall prevention. And that could be a great thing. It is geared towards family caregivers, so you could share that episode out with family caregivers. Again, to just provide some thought-provoking tips, tools, resources on this topic of fall prevention. So I'll open it up for questions now. And if you have any questions and you want to follow up with me after the fact, there's my email address. I do see one about what if a person does not want to use the device because they're embarrassed? How do you convince them? That's a really tough question because I do see that a lot. So this person or this situation, you're not alone. I think, you know, if you approach it from kind of the benefit to them of why it's going to be good for them, maybe if you discover that it's really important to them that they do get out and about to a weekly bridge club or faith service or something of that sort, you could say, well, I've noticed when you go out and about and you have your walker or your cane with you, you're able to just get around easier. And it makes getting out to those activities less of a less physically exhausting for you. So would you consider taking it out with you or, approaching it from a place of, okay, what is their goals and desires? Maybe it's to stay in place, age in place in at home. Maybe it's to continue to get out to social activities. Then finding a way to communicate to them that by using the assistive device, it's going to help them be able to continue to do that for a longer period of time. It will be to their benefit. I know in the podcast episode, my guest April, she shared that with her aunt, She was physically not out of breath when she used her walker. And so April pointed that out to her. She said, Aunt Joy, did you notice that, you know, when you use your walker, you're not as out of breath when you go to the elevator in her senior living community? So maybe it'd be a good idea to use the walker every time so that you're not exhausted by the time you get to the elevator. So those kinds of things. It might just be the approach. You could also use that SET acronym that I talked about, you know, support them, let them know that you want want them to be safe in their environment. You empathize that, you know, I understand how it can be kind of embarrassing to use the walker, or I can understand how using a walker isn't cool, or I don't know, I'm blanking on a word for it, but then to land with the truth. But the truth is, if you don't use your walker and you have another fall, then you could potentially end up in the hospital. And I know that's something we both don't want for you. So would you consider maybe using it more often? Those kinds of things. So a very common question. Another one, how do you recommend someone on hospice helps prevent falls if they naturally decline? That is a really good question. I know every situation is so different. I think that you know, as a person is declining, they're losing that strength and mobility, it might be a matter of encouraging those assistive devices. It might also be having a care provider, maybe it's the family member that walks alongside them anytime they move about their environment, or maybe it's a time to look into professional home care like we provide at Home Instead, to have kind of that what we call standby assistance, so that anytime that person gets up and walks about, that they have someone right there. And so utilizing things like those gait belts can be helpful. But many folks, as this person works for a hospice company, so I'm sure that you're very well aware that, you know, over time, it might be that person is no longer safe to get up and out of bed and walk about by themselves. So it does lead to the use of a wheelchair. And so safe transfer is needed, or eventually they do become bedbound. So it's really hard to kind of talk through that, but making sure that safety is the top priority can be helpful. And one last question. I see, you know, a younger client refuses a walker because she's convinced herself she will get an injury if she falls with the walker. That's a really tough one too. If there is any sort of maybe physical therapist or occupational therapist that can help explain to the person the benefits of a fall or of a walker and preventing falls, that might be a good way to go about it. Sometimes when it comes from a place of authority, like a healthcare provider, that can usually go sometimes further than maybe a family member or friend trying to convince them. So I hope that those tips were helpful. I know we're at the top of the hour. I want to thank everyone again so much for joining.
Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to this episode of Empowering Professionals in Aging, presented by Home Instead and hosted by the American Society on Aging. For more information about Home Instead, visit homeinstead.com.